All right, before we begin today's episode, I want to send our heartfelt condolences and love to our community in Baltimore. This place has been home to me, to citizens, to this podcast, to a lot of what you see. It's been home for the last couple of years, and just an unthinkable, unspeakable tragedy took place to kick off this past week, and you know, we're just thinking and sending love to this city, and also sending condolences to the families of those victims. I just can't imagine what you're going through right now, but just wishing you nothing but peace, as much peace as possible, given the situation. And the memories of those brave workers will live on forever. And just know that we're thinking of you. Thank you.
Beam me up, Brian. Beam me up, Brian. Beam me up.
A bridge collapsing is just one of those things that you just don't think about. You just don't think it'll happen, you know, unless you are one of the millions of people across the world who suffer from an actual phobia of these sorts of structures. But you just, you know, driving over a bridge is just something you just take for granted. So for this week to be anchored by such a tragic story and for it to have happened so close to where we are, it has been a week of trying to process it, trying to imagine the Baltimore skyline over the Patapsco River without the Key Bridge, trying to stop myself from imagining what those workers were going through as they were fighting for their lives in just a situation that I'm sure just happened in a blink of an eye. You know, just it was a lot. It was a lot. And it's a lot to unpack about everything that happened. And it's a lot to unpack about what this means for the economy, locally and nationally. And I mean, there's a lot to unpack about what's next for the Port of Baltimore. So let's get you caught up on everything that happened this week with the collapse of Baltimore's Key Bridge. And we'll start with the search for those missing workers who were on that bridge that night. Coming up on Brian's World.
Connect with Brian on Instagram and X at Beam Me Up Brian. Get news and more at citizen6.com. This transmission continues on the other side. It's Brian's World.
Every year, over 1 million fires burn in America. Fortunately, firefighters are on the job, saving life and property, and you can be a part of it. 7 out of 10 firefighters and emergency responders are volunteers. There's no typical firefighter. Anyone can volunteer to serve their community. Volunteering as a first responder is really about having the heart and drive to make a difference where it's needed most. Your community needs you. Are you ready to answer the call? Learn more and find local volunteer opportunities at makemeafirefighter.org.
This is about to be a hell of a night.
Hey, yo, it's Tayo.
I'm Melissa Carr.
This is Ray Shrimmer.
It's Brian's World Live.
Are you ready? You know what it is.
Y'all turn up.
So over the last couple of months, I developed this habit of waking up around maybe 4 in the morning and, you know, just doing a check of things, checking around our home. And then also just checking my phone, you know, to see if any breaking news has happened. And I'll never forget how my throat got dry and how like my stomach kind of dropped a little bit when I saw a Baltimore headline, you know, and it was on all of my outlets. You know, it took me a few minutes to get in gear to say, okay, I need to share this information. But I think the paralysis came from just a sheer shock of like, wait, what? Like even watching the video, it's like, nah. Come to find out, by the time that we had really got that information, a couple of hours had passed. Now that the investigation began, they were able to get their hands on like the dispatch calls when all of this happened. And it began at 1:28 a.m. on Tuesday morning.
I need one of you guys on the south side, one of you guys on the north side. Hold all traffic on the Key Bridge. There's a ship approaching that just lost their steering. So until you get that under control, we got to stop all traffic. 10-4L. I'm en route to the south side.
This is West Direction.
I'm holding traffic now. I was driving, but we stopped prior to the bridge, so I'll have all out-of-loop traffic stopped.
10-4, is there a crew working on the bridge right now?
2-9-1, but yeah.
Good.
Want me to stop traffic on this site right now?
Yeah, if we can stop traffic, just make sure no one's on the bridge right now. I'm not sure where. If there's a crew up there, you might want to notify whoever the foreman is, see if we can get them off the bridge temporarily.
10-4, once the other unit gets here, I'll ride up on the bridge. I have all interloop traffic stopped at this time. Once you get here, I'll go grab the workers on the key bridge and then stop the outer loop.
213 dispatch, the whole bridge just fell down. Start is whoever, everybody. The whole bridge just collapsed.
10-4, dispatch is direct.
That's correct.
This time.
Do we know if all traffic was stopped?
I can't get to the other side, sir. The bridge is down. We're going to have to get somebody on the other side, Anne Arundel County MSP, to get up here and stop traffic coming northbound on the T bridge.
C-13, I'm holding all traffic northbound.
Yeah, that was courtesy of the MTA, the Maryland Transportation Authority Police, who shared that audio. And the crazy thing about it is, like, you know, just hearing it all in real time. It's not edited at all. Nothing was cut out. Like, this is literally how everything unfolded, if you will. And if my math serves me correctly, that means there was about a minute and eight seconds. That's all parties that were involved in this had to respond before the bridge collapsed, if you will. So that means the first responders who were on the scene, the people who were blocking off the bridge. I mean, even the ship's pilot that radioed all of that in. And unfortunately, those workers who, I mean, that 1 minute and 8 seconds wasn't enough for six of them. God bless them. But, you know, I just remember the initial moment of hearing this audio for the first time and just thinking, like, all of this happened in real time, just literally an unthinkable situation. That's why Maryland Governor Wes Moore called that pilot and those first responders heroes, because that Mayday call was really the catalyst of what shut down the bridge. Had that call not come through, and had it not come through soon enough, there would have been a lot more people on the bridge.
Now, the thing that we know is that, you know, even as the boat was coming in, you know, we had a ship that was coming in at 8 knots. So coming in at a very rapid speed. We do know that the investigation is currently going on. But I have to say, I'm thankful for the folks who once the, you know, once the warning came up and once notification came up that there was a Mayday, who literally, by being able to stop cars from coming over the bridge, these people are heroes. They saved lives last night.
That clip was courtesy of NBC Today and NBC News. And it was of Governor Wes Moore during a press conference on Tuesday morning. Governor Wes Moore highlighted the heroic efforts of those first responders and that ship pilot who called in that Mayday call, but unfortunately, it wasn't enough to save everyone. You see, at the time of the collapse, there were workers that were on the bridge. They were filling potholes. They worked for a company named Bronner Builders, and the workers are originally from El Salvador, Guatemala, the Honduras, and Mexico. Authorities transitioned their search efforts from a rescue mission to a recovery mission, meaning that those that are missing are presumed dead. Now, they did find the bodies of two of the workers from a submerged truck on Wednesday, and a lot of the search efforts had to be paused while they clean up the debris in the area, because, you know, it's dangerous for those divers to be down there with all that debris from the bridge as well. So, just a really sad situation. The wives of one of the workers had said that they were on break when it happened. So, I'm not exactly sure what, you know, those final moments looked like for them and how if they were even able to respond to any calls, any mayday calls from a foreman or, you know, just authorities in the area. I mean, I guess it just wasn't enough time for them. Now, there were two people that were rescued from the water right after the collapse. One of the rescue workers was completely fine. He was unhurt. And the other one, I think that, yeah, he's been discharged. They took him to University of Maryland Medical Center. But from reports, both of those men are just reliving a nightmare in their heads right now. And I just can't imagine that. So continuing to pray for those families and praying for the authorities that are searching for the missing. And hopefully they can find them to give those families closure, you know. One of the things that I really appreciated about this past week in the response to this tragedy was how Mayor Brandon Scott and Governor Wes Moore spearheaded a conversation that kind of stonewalled those idiotic questions or idiotic statements that just didn't necessarily read the room correctly and were asking about rebuilding and asking about the economic damage of all of this while an active search for survivors was still going on. I really appreciated both of those leaders standing firm against those stupid questions. I mean, it really made me upset to kind of hear those reporters ask that. But them responding how they did, them saying, no, we're not talking about any of that. We're only focused on finding these workers and focused on being there for these families. Something about that just felt very human to me. Felt very, very loving to me. And I really appreciated that. Now, as recovery efforts continue, a big part of the success of those recovery efforts is hinged on the cleanup effort. That has begun. Cranes were brought into the port on Friday. Two huge cranes. And they say that the biggest one on the East Coast is on the way right now. So cleanup efforts have begun. And while rebuilding hasn't begun, obviously, the conversations, and I would say very early conversations, still a bunch of experts just spitballing, but those conversations have also begun. And according to an article posted on AP yesterday by Ben Finley and Brian Witt, rebuilding efforts could take anywhere from 18 months to several years. That's rebuilding of the bridge. And that's what experts are saying. And they're also suggesting that the cost could be anywhere from $400 million to twice that amount. Now, one of the things that I noticed just off the bat is how wide of a range this is, whether we're talking time or whether we're talking expenses. It points to a couple of things. Number one, I think it just points to the fact that, you know, this is all still very fresh. This is all still new. Experts, like many other humans, need more time to process all of this, and that's fine, you know. But I think it's also indicative of just how big, how colossal this moment really is. And it's one that is like, you know, I think the more they look at it, they're like, this really could take some time. And I believe it will. I'm no expert in the matter, but just, I mean, this was a really big thing, you know. And the Key Bridge is very important to Baltimore, but also to the East Coast and apparently to the country as a whole. Each moment that this port is down, that cargo can't come in and out of the port of Baltimore, it is a costly moment for, as the U.S. Secretary of Transportation, Pete Buttigieg, highlights the supply chain.
With regard to the port, again, the Coast Guard, in coordination with the Army Corps of Engineers, will lead on the channel cleanup and the reopening so that that port can get back to full operation. We are concerned about the local economic impact, with some 8,000 jobs directly associated with port activities. And we are concerned about implications that will ripple out beyond the immediate region because of the roles, because of the port's role in our supply chains. This is an important port for both imports and exports, and it's America's largest vehicle handling port, which is important not only for car imports and exports, but also for farm equipment. No matter how quickly the channel can be reopened, we know that it can't happen overnight, and so we're going to have to manage the impacts in the meantime.
That was from the White House in a press conference on Wednesday. Now, the Port of Baltimore is the deepest harbor of the Chesapeake Bay here in Maryland. And apparently it's the closest of all East Coast ports to the Midwest. It has 5 public and 12 private terminals, and that's according to the Maryland government website, and is one of the smallest container ports on the northeastern seaboard, which handled about 265,000 containers towards the end of last year, according to shipping expert Lars Jensen. In comparison, the Port of New York in New Jersey handled around 2 million containers in the same quarter, and then down in Norfolk, it's about 850,000. As Secretary Buttigieg highlighted, this is a big port for car shipments. And from the tone of his voice, it kind of sounds like that was, you know, something that they're worried about. They handled more than 750,000 vehicles in 2023, according to data from the Maryland Port Administration. And it takes care of vehicles for Nissan, Toyota, GM, Volvo, Volkswagen, Audi, Lambo, Bentley. And it's also one of the largest U.S. ports for handling farm and construction machinery, as well as agricultural products. In fact, imports of agricultural products were around 3 million tons last year, including 1.2 million of sugar, which, you know, Baltimore is basically the home of Domino Sugar. They also imported a lot of salt, gypsum, fertilizers, forest products, and that's all according to the lead agricultural commodities analyst at Kipler. Now, in terms of exports, during the first 9 months of last year, Baltimore was the second biggest port for U.S. coal exports behind Norfolk, Virginia. That's according to data from the U.S. Energy Information Administration. It's also highlighted in this Reuters article. It's going to be linked below if you want to check it out. Baltimore exported about 20.3 million short tons of coal, which is up about 14.3 million short tons during the same period of the year before, in 2022. About 13.3 million short tons of exports from Baltimore during the first 9 months of last year were steam coal, and 7 million short tons were metallurgical coal. Now, it's a long list of imports and exports and all of that. You can imagine, I mean, the picture has been painted that this is a very busy port, not to mention the cruise ships as well. You got Norwegian, you got Carnival, you got Royal Caribbean. All three use these ports for Caribbean, Canadian, and Atlantic destinations. Just last year, they carried more than 444,000 passengers out of this port, or I guess in and out of this port. It also has warehouses that send metal out to London, and there are a lot of fuel traders that operate in and out of the Port of Baltimore. So it is a very busy port, and it does seem to be somewhat of a vital artery to the American economy, if you will. In the short term, it seems like most of these companies are sending shipments in and out of other ports that aren't too far from Baltimore. But there are, I think they said, about 10 ships that are stuck in the port right now that are waiting until, you know, obviously until things are cleaned up. So cleanup effort is on the way, and it's only a matter of time. How much time and how much money? Well, that's up in the air. But progress is progress. And just from a healing standpoint and from a processing standpoint, seeing those cranes out there and seeing that the Navy is sending 4 more, and that there's one super huge crane that's on the way this weekend, just seeing that, that's progress. That's something that this community can lean on. as the city of Baltimore tries to process an unthinkable tragedy. Now, coming up on the other side, could all this have been avoided? What's the status of America's bridges and infrastructure? Because it definitely seems like a lot of things are breaking down in ways that we never would have imagined recently. I'll answer those questions and more really briefly on the other side. It's Brian's World.
Don't go nowhere. I'm coming to see you. And y'all don't want no problems.
It's Brian's World Live.
There I was in my business suit, all dressed up, just uptight as I could possibly be. And I don't remember much of what was said at that first AA meeting. It was more the feeling of the meeting itself.
That's what has kept me going. I know it works, and I see the people ahead of me with more sobriety. I see how happy they are, and I want that. I want that too.
And what I notice about AA is it sort of helps me to relax and learn to really be happy with my sobriety. It's a richer life to live.
That's exactly what Alcoholics Anonymous does. It teaches us how to live without drinking. It teaches us how to have fun and really enjoy life without drinking.
This program's given me the good life. The only good life I've ever known.
Visit AA.org for more information and download the Meeting Guide app to find a meeting near you.
So I'm a tinkerer. I'm a person that, you know, ever since my childhood, I like to push buttons and build stuff and break stuff down and rebuild it and all of that. So hearing these engineers from, I'll say different flavors of engineers, different tastes, engineers that approach their craft, that find a different artwork in what they do. Hearing all of these engineers kind of throw their hat into, you know, their different suggestions, their various suggestions, and how they see all this, their different opinions. I've been dancing on a lot of their opinions, just trying to imagine how all of this was going to take place, the rebuild, that is. But another thing that I was really holding on to in these conversations this past week and really tapping into is the preventative side of situations like this. And it really piqued my interest because I'm like, well, the country has seen its share of bridges falling down and highways falling down in recent years. And it just leads to the question of the overall status of this country's infrastructure. Now, it's worth noting that President Joe Biden has been talking about this country's infrastructure for quite some time. In fact, that was part of what he ran on to get into the White House. And he's trying to pass this big infrastructure bill, which did end up getting passed. And, you know, he's pushing for the remodeling and repairing of much of America's infrastructure, including bridges, highways, and railways. So this conversation is something that has definitely, I mean, it was needed. It was needed. I have to give President Joe Biden credit for that. Unfortunately, this is a very unfortunate way for all of this to play out. And as we see another bridge falling apart, for lack of better words, I mean, despite this massive ship hitting it at this high rate of speed, Joe Biden was right. We need to focus on our infrastructure in this country. And I highlighted that in an article on Citizen 6 that I posted on, I think that was like Thursday. This is interesting. According to 2022 data from the American Road and Transportation Builders Association, over 40,000 U.S. bridges are structurally deficient. That's their words, structurally deficient, meaning that they require significant repair. Now, a lot of these bridges, and I'm not trying to scare you, which this entire article was about people who have what's called gyrophobia and are scared of bridges and, you know, kind of researching all of that. And if that's one of you, you might want to cut this off, because a lot of these bridges that, you know, require this significant repair, if you will, they're still active. You know, they're active, but they have these weight limits posted, and they're considered safe according to regulations. In fact, about 167 million trips are taken across these, quote, structurally deficient structures each day. A civil engineering professor at the University of California, Berkeley, said, quote, the state of bridges in the U.S. is not good and we're losing the battle. Then, a civil and environmental engineering professor at Virginia Tech, Kevin Hayslip, said, quote, I think what we found is that we deferred maintenance for a long time, and then all of a sudden we're at a point where we have this big backlog of maintenance. We really don't have the funding to catch up at this point. Now, of course, this is before Joe Biden was able to get that bill passed. So what I anticipate, and even what I've seen here with one of what people call one of the scariest bridges in the world, what I've seen here with our Bay Bridge, there's been a lot of work done on that recently. So clearly the money is flowing now. And I want to say thanks in part to Joe Biden's infrastructure bill. But it's been a week of interviews and there's been a lot of opinions shared, and a good portion of interviews that I've heard from a lot of experts in the engineering field. And quite a few of them were asking about something called concrete dolphins. ABC 7 in Chicago went to their Betsy Ross Bridge to kind of try and understand more of what happened here in Baltimore.
You know, this is very similar to that bridge in Baltimore. It was built around the same time, within just a few years, and it's almost the same total length as well. But this bridge has one big difference, and it's not what's on the bridge, it's what's in the water.
Yeah, they spoke to John Hansen, the CEO of Chicago's Port Authority, and he said this.
All of our bridges have protection systems in place to prevent ships from striking.
But he says the key difference sits in the Delaware River near the bridge support piers.
When you talk about the Betsy Ross Bridge, we have concrete dolphins that are protective against ships that will prevent a ship from striking the pier. That's what we have at the Betsy Ross Bridge.
You can see those circular structures from Drone 6. And when you look at video from Baltimore, you don't see them near the support piers. Something a structural engineering professor at Drexel noticed right away.
Why were there no protection systems around the pier?
Dr. Abe Agayiri analyzes structural collapses. He was surprised that this type of bridge, known as a continuous truss bridge, completely failed.
When something is continuous, it is supposed to be able to at least hang on. What I saw was that once the pier that was supporting that span gave way, the bridges went down. There was no hesitation.
And I think that what's making it tough for me to wrap my mind around all of this is that knowing that that type of technology exists, I kind of feel like it's one of those things that every bridge should have. Just in case, regardless of how rare the occasion is that a boat will run into any part of the bridge, regardless of how rare that is, just for the simple fact that that technology exists, I can't help but question why it wasn't there at the Key Bridge. Now, it's worth pointing out that Governor Wes Moore, one of the first things that he said was that the bridge, it had already passed its inspections. In fact, according to a USA Today article that highlighted a report from the Federal Highway Administration's National Bridge Inventory that last inspected the Francis Scott Key Bridge, it showed that it was in, quote, overall fair condition, and that was back in 2021. Now, the database also noted that, quote, bank protection is in need of minor repairs. River control devices and embankment protection have a little minor damage. Banks and or channel have minor amounts of drift, end quote. Oh, they also said that the bridge had some minor deterioration, but otherwise was listed in satisfactory condition, which is consistent with the data that I mentioned in the article that I wrote for Citizen 6, saying that a lot of these bridges were found to need that repair but are still in operation just under certain restrictions. So while we continue to pray for these families and be there for these families and be there for this city, I also hope that the federal government and even local governments are taking into account how important it is at this juncture to modernize this country's infrastructure so that something like this doesn't happen again. There's all sorts of engineers mentioning different opinions on this, and some people feel that there was no protection available to prevent a catastrophe like this because of the size of the ship. And I personally can't help but think that, I mean, at least a concrete barrier or some of those concrete barriers would have helped, you know? But as this investigation continues, I'm sure we'll know more about things that could have been put into place and things that can be put into place for other bridges across the country as protective measures. Now, I hope that my questioning doesn't sound like I'm trying to tell engineers how to do their job, because I have no clue about any of that. Well, I won't say no clue, but I'm not as experienced with that, obviously. You know, I'm a media guy, a communications guy. And although I'm questioning my questioning, if you will, there have been some people who have just been going back and forth with these engineers that ain't no question about it. They literally think that they know what's better. And I will say that that sort of conversation is not conducive to anything. The best thing that we can do at this point is to take a step back and allow the experts to rebuild this port, and also allow them to decipher different ways to put in different protective measures for our other bridges across the country. The arguing and the Twitter fingers and all of that, or I guess X fingers at this stage of the game, just doesn't help anything, and it kind of just looks foolish, you know? And as this investigation and recovery effort continues, let's keep in mind that we lost people that day. Let's keep in mind those families of those that we lost. Let that spearhead our efforts to recover our lost, investigate what happened, and rebuild the port. God bless those families. Thank you.
Connect with Brian on Instagram and X at BeamMeUpBrian. Get news and more at citizen6.com. It's Brian's world.